1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. It's Feldis and Kale, and we are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And Dan Feldis, welcome back to the program. We missed you for the last couple of weeks.
Well, it's good to be back, Ken Kale. I missed doing it. Had a good trip, though. We visited some family in Iowa, and I hadn't seen a good amount of folks for a while, especially with COVID, you know, and traveling. So it was good to see everybody, but it's good to be back at it on Feldis and Kale, the most listened to radio show in the United States.
Without question. I don't think anybody can compete with us. And our guest today is someone that no one can compete with in terms of taking care of your car, and that is Dan Weed from Weed Family Automotive. And they're located and have been for, 26 years now at 124 Storage Street?
Yes, exactly.
Wow.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Dan.
Great to have you with us, Dan. And Dan was brave enough to come back for another taping of the Feldis and Kale radio program. And as we said, Weed Family Automotive has been a large part of the community since 1995. How did it all begin, Dan, for you and Weed Family Automotive?
Well, so it came to a point in my career where I had to make a decision. I didn't see a whole lot of opportunity for advancement where I was, and the place where I was, I can't say enough about. I had a great opportunity there. But I was looking to do better and make myself better, so I looked at a bunch of different business opportunities. Went back to what I knew the best as, you know, working on cars, and decided to open a shop. I had been doing some side work out of my house for a little while at night, and was just getting busier and busier, so I opted to open my business. And so here I am 26 years later. I've got four technicians on staff, two service advisors, and my wife and myself. So it's grown to be been an amazing ride all along, and certainly there's something every week that we can learn. And I've taken the thought process that if there isn't a week that goes by that I don't learn something, then I need a new career.
Right.
They've told me I've needed a new career for a long time, Dan Weed, but I continue in this one. So you said it's been an amazing ride. I'm sure there was a pun intended there. The Weed Family Automotive at 124 Storage Street in Concord. Dan Weed is with us here on Feldis and Kale. So bring us up to date, Dan. What is happening in the automotive industry? I know new and used car sales right now are really up.
They are, and it's rather interesting. Not only are the sales as far as volume up, but the prices, particularly in the used car market right now, are through the roof. I mean, you're talking upwards of 20 and 30% more in value for that used car right now. You know, if you're in the market to buy a car, unfortunately, this isn't a great time, much like the housing market, because, again, the prices are that much higher. I've seen cars, used cars in particular, being sold for almost as much as they were when they were new right now, because the inventory levels are low in the used car market. The new cars, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day at one of the local dealerships. They're not expecting the release of the 22 model year for another 2 to 3 months, when typically September is their release month. And a lot of it, you know, as far as the used car market, really is more inventory, a lack of inventory than anything. You go to some of the local places around town, and you're seeing not even half their normal inventory on the lot for a lot of these places. The auction prices are up. Everywhere the prices are up in the used car market, so it's really driving that. And then the new car sales right now, again, the inventory levels aren't there. There's parts shortages. You know, we've all heard about the chip shortages, because it's affecting everybody from, you know, personal computing to cell phones, and on the list goes. But it's hugely affecting the new car market right now, where you've got tens of thousands of vehicles just sitting idle that can't be sold.
Well, and Dan, I wonder how that affects specifically your business in a number of ways. Number one is, you know, I think a lot of folks who may have a significant repair that they need, you know, on their car, may think, oh, you know what, I'm just going to get a used car or just go buy a new car. And if the inventory is down in terms of what they're seeing and the prices are way up, logically, it seems like you would be getting more business, where people are coming to you like, you know what, I'm just going to fix my car. I'm going to go with the car I have.
Yeah, and we all remember the illustrious Cash for Clunkers program.
Right, right, right.
And back then, you know, if you had even a $400 or $500 repair bill, people are like, no, I'm getting rid of this thing. I'm going to take advantage of this Cash for Clunkers program. And off it went. Well, we're just the opposite right now. So that $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 repair bill, when you go to start shopping for that new car or replacement car, all of a sudden that $2,000 or $3,000 for another couple of years is looking more and more palatable and a much better way to go, because it's, you know, the devil you know, the devil you don't know. And if you're familiar with your car and the rest of it's going to hold together for a few more years, then a few thousand dollars over a course of a couple of years isn't that bad of an investment.
Yeah, and I can't say enough about you know, the work that you do, Weed Family Automotive. I mean, I think you guys work hard, you're honest, great service, and I think that's all people really need and want, and pretty much anything, is people who work hard and are honest and provide good service, and you guys do it to a T. And
thank you.
And how are you grappling with this influx right now? You have an amazing staff, but how are you juggling it all?
So it becomes a challenge. I ran into a scenario not long ago. I was very fortunate, and I'll call it blessed, to be able to hire on a fourth technician for our shop. I've never been in the hiring process like it was this past time, in that, you know, typically you have a series of candidates that you apply for, that get the applications, resumes, go through them, filter through them. And then you start the interview process. And typically we do a two-step interview. So we'll come in, do a first round of interviews, pick the candidates what we really like, and then come back and do a second interview with the rest of my staff to make sure everybody's on board with it. So nothing unusual there, and it works pretty well. Mm-hmm. So this round, I put an ad out. I had four people that applied for the job, for the position. I had interviews and dates and times set up for all of those people. And out of those four interviews that we had set up, now I'm staying late after work, you know, so I've worked 12 hours a day,
right, right,
staying late, you know, my time and everything. But out of those four, one person showed up.
Wow.
And, you know, count our blessings that was the one person that we were looking for. It was that needle in a haystack. I was looking for a young guy, somebody we could teach and train and bring up to, you know, the way we want to do things. And it's worked out well. But the other three candidates that I had appointments with, I had no phone call, no email, no text, no Facebook message, no nothing. Just that was it. They were just gone and never showed up.
Wow. Hey, I think you speak for a lot of people who own businesses these days, having difficulty hiring. I mean, you see the help wanted everywhere. So it's not just your field specifically, but I think in all walks of life, there are shortages of employees.
There certainly is. I know enough other business owners, and not just in our field, but any of the skilled trades and whatnot. But the hiring process out there is difficult at best. And, you know, unfortunately, I think a lot of it comes down to the whole stimulus packages and that were handed out. And, you know, I can certainly wrap my head around the first one or two, but after that, it's like, we need to get back to work. We need to get these business doors open and people in place. And certainly you go around to some of the restaurants, Ken, I'm sure you've seen it, that these restaurants now that made it through COVID and have done well are now all of a sudden having to shut down for a day or two more than what they normally did because they don't have the staff.
No, exactly right. Not only you know, cutting down on days, but sometimes when they're open, the hours aren't as long, or you see some fast food places that are only doing drive-up these days and what have you. So, I mean, it's impacted so many people, including the automotive industry as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that story just astonished me, Dan. I mean, if you schedule, setting aside the workforce shortage issue just generally, but if you schedule an interview, mm-hmm. you schedule an interview, you show up, and if you can't show up, if something comes up, I mean, people understand that happens. You communicate it. I don't get that. Yeah. Three people did that out of four? Yeah. That's crazy.
Three out of four people. Again, no phone call, no email, no Facebook message, no communication at all.
That's not
just
right.
Just didn't bother showing up. So, you know, if all of a sudden I see those names come back up in the future, you know,
well, they're not getting
they're immediately off the list.
Right,
you know?
Right. Yeah. They should be.
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of especially younger people, you know, realize that and how that could hurt their reputation. Very early on in their careers. I mean, they just don't get it.
Yeah. I'm not even sure that it was really, I'll call it the younger generation, because I had a pretty good mix of candidates.
Yeah.
And again, fortunately, the one that I hired was one of the younger generation. Well, I'll label them the millennial generation. But I've certainly been lucky, because now I've got three people under 30 on my staff.
Nice.
And hard workers, they all have their own places, own homes, whatever. And they know what it means to earn what you've got. You know, they got their amenities that they like and whatnot. But I don't think that's, unfortunately, the norm out there. And it's not typically what we're accustomed to. And again, I've been very, very fortunate with that. But my suspicion is a lot of this has to do with the unemployment process, the COVID, you know, paychecks that were out there and whatnot. And they had to do at least a bare minimum to show that they were looking for a job.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I applied to this place and whatever. But that's the bare minimum. I sort of kind of wish that on my end of it, that if that was the case and they're trying to fulfill these requirements, that I could report back to, say, unemployment and say, no, they never showed up for that interview.
Yeah. I mean, that often happens. I mean, that does happen. Mm-hmm. If unemployment determines that somebody, you know, for whatever reason is, you know, either potentially falsifying their reports or not doing it in a good faith.
Mm-hmm.
They're not doing a good faith work search. Again, you got to file every week. Every week you got to file that you're looking for work and that you haven't turned down an offer of suitable work. But if you were contacted and somebody was receiving unemployment and you told them that story, they wouldn't be getting unemployment.
Right. I would hope, but I've never been on that side of it. And, you know, if I was out of work, I had a job within a short period of time. And, you know, fortunately, I haven't had to be part of that. And given the job climate out there, there isn't any reason in my mind for that situation to happen.
I think the real barriers, and I don't know how much you've seen it, but a lot of the real barriers for working people and families is childcare.
Exactly. Yeah.
And some to some degree housing near where their work is.
Mm-hmm.
And, have you seen that kind of thing play out a little bit?
I personally haven't experienced it, but I see it within my family. My daughter has two kids, and so I see her struggles with childcare, and typically it goes back to the grandparents, us.
right.
Hey, can you babysit, you know, so I can go to work? And so I understand that wholly. And of course, you know, you mentioned the housing market, and I know for certain that the housing market in Concord right now, even the rental or lease market or assisted living is horrible at best. You know, you're talking year, 2-3 year waiting lists is the stories that I've heard, and nothing readily available.
Well, as they say, Ken and Dan, housing is where jobs go to sleep at night.
Mm-hmm.
It's also really, you know, it's a morally important issue too, but it's an economic issue. It's a competitiveness issue. And when surrounding states are really ramping up their efforts on workforce and affordable housing, and New Hampshire has fallen behind, that's an issue for people getting jobs and keeping jobs.
Exactly. And, you know, it's interesting you bring that up, and I think back to the days. So my grandparents lived in Manchester. Of course, we know the mills in Manchester. Well, everybody doesn't always see it, but right across the street from the mills, particularly on Canal Street, was all the housing for their employees.
Right.
You know, so they knew that if I'm going to hire these people and need these thousands of people to run my mills, I better have a place for them to stay. So they built the apartments across the street, and that's where most of their employees lived. And, you know, it seems that we've kind of gone away from that ideology quite a bit. I mean, even back in the days of the family farm, you had 2, 3, 4 generations living under the same roof.
Right.
Now it's our expectation that our kids grow up and get a place for themselves.
Dan Weed, our guest today from Weed Family Automotive, located for 26 years now at 124 Store Street in Concord. And Dan Weed, there are some who would like us to be driving electric vehicles, everybody, by 2030. And many, of course, already are driving electric vehicles. How is the maintenance? I mean, is that a realistic possibility that many of us, or 60 to 70% of us, will be driving electric vehicles by 2030?
I personally think it's a stretch
yeah.
To see people in 2030, you're talking 9 years away, to be 60 to 70% of our new fleet, or new car sales, be electric. I think it's a bit of a stretch. We're starting to get more and more, I call it market acceptability of the electric vehicles, that the image of the go-kart, so to speak, or golf cart is going away. And you know, the power and performance in these electric vehicles, if you've not driven one, is pretty amazing. So I think that part of it, you know, has started to go away, that image of it, so to speak. I think, like any alternative fuel vehicles, our biggest challenge is a refueling, or in this case, a recharging network. Mm-hmm. You know, Tesla has done an amazing job, you know, putting out their recharging networks out there. Now the rest of the industry needs to catch up. And some of these car manufacturers, I think, have been a bit short-sighted that it needs to be standardized. You know, that charging system, whether it's the Chevy, whether it's a Nissan, Ford, whatever, it should be a standardized charging system, where it appears right now most of it is different. So you need these proprietary charging systems. And so until we standardize that, and then, of course, it comes back to the utility infrastructure at this point. And we can talk about the failed Northern Pass. We can talk about the failed gas pipeline. And you look in California right now, if you take the California model that's out there right now, you've heard about the rolling brownouts, you know, throughout the summer, because they don't have enough supply for the demand out there. So they're cutting back that supply to be able to meet it. And so we've got the same problem, I think, in my personal opinion, knocking on our back door. We've said no to some of these bigger utility projects, which in the end is going to be probably one of our major downfalls at this point. You know, building new hydro stations is out of the question given the environmental standards right now. You know, a lot of people don't know that our little power station down here in Bow, the Merrimack station, you know, it's one of the last coal-fired plants out there. It is also one of the cleanest coal-fired plants on the East Coast. And on top of that, they have a backup system down there of two naturally fired or natural gas powered turbine engines for a backup, which is your simplest, cleanest way to go. But in order to feed some of those in a bigger setting, you need a huge pipeline to feed that.
Oh, absolutely. So it, you know, the electric car industry is obviously going well, but having 60 to 70% of people in electric cars by the year 2030 is not so much due to the lack of production of the electric cars, but more an infrastructure situation.
In my mind, yes. Yeah. You know, first, you know, we're getting closer to that market acceptability, and more and more people are grasping that new technology out there. I mean, you can't drive down the road right now and not pass a Tesla. They stand out in the crowd, so to speak. And they're on the cutting edge and the highest in production right now. But, you know, at that point, now you've got to upgrade certain things in your house. You know, some of the houses don't have, in the older houses, a 220 system, you know. So you've got to consider some of the electrical upgrades that it's going to take to put that charger at home or wherever you have to be. And then start to plan your trips accordingly, you know, because it's not the five-minute refuel that we have in a gas or diesel car or even a natural gas car. You know, you're talking upwards sometimes of an hour or so. Maybe two.
Yeah, and it's certainly key to New Hampshire, too, to be able to have that charging infrastructure on our highways. Mm-hmm. And we'll lose out to Maine, Vermont, and others, including on tourism money, if we don't do that. And we had Senator David Waters on, who pointed out that the Sununu administration has actually sat on the Volkswagen settlement money and not deployed it to get those charging stations out. And those are universal charging stations, not, you know, unique to whatever model of the car. So I think it's something that, for whoever is listening out there, understanding the need for that infrastructure and raising your voice, having your voice heard about getting that money out the door, not just sitting on it. I mean, the governor needs to get it out the door, deploy it. It helps our economy. It helps people on the ground.
It does. And, you know, I had the opportunity to look at part of that grant process for the Volkswagen settlement. Part of the diesel emissions package. We looked at it for our snowmobile club to upgrade some of our grooming equipment. Unfortunately, as part of that grant money, you have to do away with the old equipment, and they'll only give you, in this, in our particular case, like 20% of the value of the purchase. So, you know, we were hoping that it was just going to be an all-in-all-out, you know, free grant money, so to speak, but there was a lot of stipulations as part of it, and one of the stipulations was that old equipment needed to be destroyed. So, you know, much like the Cash for Clunkers program, you had to, in that case, you had to destroy engine and transmission so they couldn't be resold. In this case, you've got to destroy the engine so it couldn't continue polluting.
I guess Dan Weed, Weed Family Automotive at 124 Store Street in Concord, been around for 26 years. We'll take a break. Feldis and Kale continues right here, 103.9, 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 103.9, 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, Feldis and Kale. We are back together again, folks.
Proudly, back together.
Yes, together again.
Renewed. Contract
yes,
renewed.
It has been renewed. To the surprise of many, I think, really.
I would say most.
Yeah, most. Proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Dan Weed with us from Weed Family Automotive in Concord at 124 Store Street. You can check them out on Facebook, weedfamilyautomotive.com, and the ever-popular Weed TV.
That's right.
You can get some great hints there and great pointers on the service of your car, the way your car works, and the reason that we need places like Weed Family Automotive, because we certainly can't figure them out, or at least I can't. So we were talking about electric cars in our previous segment, Dan Weed. So what about working on electric cars? You would have to think, or at least I would, from certainly a non-professional point of view, there is less maintenance involved with an electric car than your standard vehicle.
There definitely is. I mean, you don't have spark plugs to change. You don't have oil to change anymore in the engine, things like that. But we still have brakes, steering, suspension, tires, and things like that. Lights, wipers, cabin filters.
Yep.
All the basics are still there. So the car itself hasn't changed. Obviously, the drivetrain has, and that, you know, saves you some money there. But, you know, obviously the purchase price of the car offsets that, because the electric cars are naturally a little bit more expensive right now because they don't have that supply and demand that they do for the normal cars. But there are still things. We still need to inspect these cars. They still need to be checked out. And again, you know, we're starting to see some of these cars get into that 30, 40, 50,000 mile range, and mm-hmm. they're starting to need some repairs. And it's not a whole lot different than what we've done for years as far as suspension, steering, brakes, and whatnot. There are some, in our world, there are some safety concerns, obviously, with the high voltage systems and working around those. And also, as silly as this sounds, we have to be careful on some of these, how they're lifted up in the shop. So there's special lifting adapters on some of the cars that we have to put in so that you're not damaging the batteries that are stored under the car.
Right, right. And I'm sure there's probably, you know, when we had John previously, you talked about all these computer systems and how you have to link all this stuff up. And I can only imagine what that's like, especially dealing with newer cars and especially dealing with new electric cars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, you know, you don't give it much thought. You jump in the car, you turn the key, it starts and runs. But at that same point in time, as soon as you power that up, you've got upwards of sometimes 15, 20 different computer modules talking to each other. And this has been going on for years, but now all of a sudden you have network issues that one module is not talking to the next. You've got communication errors. Now all of a sudden our job has gone from nuts and bolts and changing things out to, oh yeah, software updates, module replacements. And oh yeah, we drop a new window switch in and we have to load software in it before it'll work.
Oh boy, I mean, it's hard enough these days, guys, to get people to talk to each other. You have to get people to talk to each other and computers to talk to each other. That's a tough one.
Welcome to my daily challenge.
Right.
I've read somewhere, Dan, where electric cars are not as difficult on brakes as your conventional vehicle. Is that true?
It is, and it actually goes back to the hybrid cars as well, because they use what we call a regenerative braking system. So all of a sudden it changes that drive motor into a generator, recharges the battery as you're coming to a stop. So no, you don't use the brakes as much. One of the things that we have seen on some of the older cars is the brakes tend to wear out maybe a little prematurely if you don't do a simple service. And we call it a caliper service. We pull the brakes all apart. We clean and lube up all the contact points where the pads mount in the caliper brackets, because as they're not being used, and because we tend to use a little bit of salt in the wintertime around here, things get corroded and rust builds up. And so those brake pads will actually seize in the caliper brackets. So a simple service of pulling the brakes apart, cleaning the contact points, lubing it up, putting it back together, will save that brake life. And typically, we like to see that around 25 to 30,000 miles. So when you would expect to be about halfway through the brakes or less on a hybrid or electric car.
So you know, we talked earlier about the chip shortage in the automotive industry and in all and many walks of life these days in many industries. Why is that? Why is there a chip shortage?
Well, it's just the global supply got shut down during COVID. I mean, all these factories were shut down, and they had nobody. You would think that a lot of this chip manufacturing is automated, but you still need somebody there to oversee the process. And, you know, they do it in clean rooms and whatnot, but we rely so heavily on the overseas markets rather than in-house. And I think if some of the stuff was brought back in-country, it wouldn't be as bad. And, you know, we start to see the huge reliance on countries like China, like Japan, Indonesia, and, you know, some of these Western countries, where if we could bring it, that process back to the United States, bring the manufacturing back, and keep the cost reasonable, I don't think we would have been hit as hard.
Well, certainly there is a major push to build and buy American, including under the Biden administration. Has there been anything specifically geared towards the chips, or has it just been a more general approach?
From what I've seen, it's been a more general approach.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I mean, in our daily lives right now, typically, you know, let's say we get a car in for a brake job. We could go to one parts store, get the parts we need. They've got everything in stock. Right now, to do a single brake job, we have to go to sometimes two or three different parts suppliers because there is such an inventory shortage out there overall on some of these parts. Even through the manufacturers, we're seeing a delay. You know, stuff we would typically get overnight or the next day is now 3 to 5 days or a week out.
Wow.
And so it's everywhere. It's a global shortage. You know, obviously the chips are at the forefront of our daily lives because it impacts everything from what we're doing here in this interview to our cell phones, to our laptops, to whatever we do. You know, the new refrigerators that have the screen on the front of them so you can see what's inside without opening it up, or you can dial up your refrigerator on your phone and see, oh, I'm grocery shopping, what's in the fridge, you know. So it affects everything.
Wow.
You know, people that are shopping for appliances right now are a minimum of 6 to 8 weeks out for a stove or refrigerator or stuff like that. So it affects everything right now.
But it's not just chips, it's other items that are integral in the production of a vehicle too, that are in short supply at this point.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, again, the electronics are at the forefront, but you know, there was a report from Automotive News not long ago that seat foam, so the foundation of the vehicle seats, you know, everything like that, and sometimes the dashboard, door panels, they can't get the foam that they need to be able to put the cars together, and on the list goes. I mean, these are the ones that are at the forefront of the problem right now, and it's a huge supply chain issue, and it's affecting everybody. There was a great podcast 2 weeks ago from some of the manufacturers, from their perspective on it, from the parts manufacturers, showing their struggles, you know, between production, warehousing, shipping, everything. You know, we talked about the shortage of employees out there. Well, as much as you wouldn't think about it, but the professional truck drivers that are out there, the trucking industry is crippled right now because there's not enough people out there. A good friend of mine, a neighbor of mine, is an owner-operator, and he was talking to me about, you know, we hear some of these national companies out there, the big trucking lines, whatnot. Some of these truck drivers are getting fed up. and they quit on the spot. So their truck is left in the middle of a truck stop in Minnesota somewhere, full of a load, and no place to, nobody to drive the truck to get it there. You know, they can track the load. They know exactly where it is. Oh, yeah, it's this truck stop in Minnesota. But the driver just quit and left the truck.
Right.
Wow. I can see. You know, it seems that, you know, this is, you know, it has a trickle-down effect because it seems to me that supplies and, you know, food and other necessities coming into grocery stores and drug stores seems to take longer these days for whatever reason. And well, the shelves aren't as well stocked as they once were.
No, and on top of that, the prices have gone up too.
Yeah, right.
The shipping costs, because we've got to pay the help more and everything. I would attribute it to fuel costs, but I want to say that I'm pretty excited right now that my diesel fuel cost for my pickup truck is at or below regular unleaded gasoline, which is the first time it's been in since I can remember.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can't relate our shipping cost to fuel, but it's the higher labor cost that is attributed to it at that point. You know, when some of these companies are so desperate that they're hiring, you know, $1,000, $2,000, $5,000 sign-on bonuses, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah, no, it really is. So as a result, are diesel vehicles becoming more popular, do you think?
I wish, you know, they're unfortunately not in this, you know, in the three-quarter ton truck and one-ton truck and above. You know, that is most of the time the way to go is with a diesel because you don't have to maintain it as much as you do the gas motor and whatnot. There is an upfront cost to it, but the fuel mileage, you know, you take your typical gas truck and your diesel truck. The diesel truck gets, you know, half again as better fuel mileage as the gas truck. So, you know, there's definitely a benefit to it. In the smaller market, in the cars and light trucks, you know, your half-ton trucks, your Colorados, your Toyota Tacomas, things like that size.
Right.
And even in the cars, no, the diesel market just hasn't taken off. The Chevy came out with the Cruise diesel, 5-6 years ago, and it kind of tanked around here. It never took off. You know, I don't even know how many they sold. You know, but we go back to the late 70s, early 80s of, you know, Mercedes and BMW, 90% of their fleet was all diesels around here. And then in the early 2000s, you had the Volkswagen diesel, which was great. I mean, back in the 80s, you had a diesel engine in these little Volkswagen Rabbits and stuff that was getting upwards of 50 miles to the gallon with no emissions on it or anything like that. And of course, back then, diesel was cheap. It was, what, $1 a gallon or whatever it was. And now, if we could translate that into the car market where you've got your diesel engine in there, little turbocharger on it, direct injection, getting 50, 55 miles to the gallon, it would be great. But I think, unfortunately, given the history of the diesels in the United States, everybody has that image of the old city bus, you know, just belching black smoke.
Right, right.
but now it's more perception than reality, right?
It truly is.
Yeah.
One of the ads that Chevy had run with the Cruise was they had a white car in a laboratory setting with guys in, you know, the lab coats and whatnot, and they took a white glove to the tailpipe, and it was barely dirty at all.
Wow.
Interesting.
Yeah. Dan Weed with us, our guest today on Feldes and Kale from Weed Family Automotive in Concord. You can give them a call at 225-7988. Charlie and Bobby standing by, as they have for quite some time.
They are waiting for your call, yes.
Of course, at Weed Family Automotive. Feldes and Kale, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Welcome back, 103.9 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Feldes and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Dan Weed is our guest from Weed Family Automotive. And, you know, you were talking about the hiring process for your shop in the earlier segment of the program. What is the future for automotive technicians? Does it remain bright?
It does. And, you know, fortunately here in the state, we've got a great system in place. You know, right here in Concord, they've got the Concord Regional Technical Center, CRTC, with an amazing automotive program. They got two great instructors there, and they do a great job with the kids starting right out of the gate in high school. I'd truly like to see it start earlier in junior high. I'd love to see shop class taught again, you know, home ec and some of these basic life skills, you know, get the kids introduced to some of the stuff, some of the trades early on, you know, whether it's woodworking, whether it's metalworking, welding, machine shop, things like that, carpentry, plumbing, you know, get them exposed to it early. But again, we were very fortunate with Concord, with the Regional Technical Center here. And then our state does an amazing job through the community college system.
Yep.
They have an amazing program. Manchester, Laconia, up north as well. They've got some great programs there at the community college system that really is second to none. I mean, you hear some of the ads for UTI out in Ohio and whatnot. I've seen the candidates coming out of our community college system are much, much better than what I see coming out of some of the other programs.
We just as a side note, last budget, you know, in the state legislature, bolstered those job training certificate programming at the community college system and those public-private partnerships. So, really a huge need in the trades and everything else, and for folks who want to get those skills, there's a lot of available jobs. So we'd really supported that. But you know, moving forward, I'm just interested, it's kind of a random question, but we got a lot of random questions on Feltus and Kale, right, Ken?
Oh, we do. That's what we specialize in, is random questioning.
Questioning. Yeah. If you've seen on the ground any changes in what, you know, repairs are needed in light of COVID, is it because people are using their cars less, or what, you know, is there anything unique about the last, well, obviously there's a lot that's unique about the last
couple of years,
but in terms of the repairs you're seeing on the ground, is there anything unique or a trend line that you're seeing related to COVID or not?
I think a lot of it is tied into the economy right now and what's going on, but going back to, you know, the used car prices, but we also start to see that, well, this time of year, the kids are going back to college. Last year, the kids didn't go back to college. So if they were around and needed a job, then they needed to get back and forth to the job and whatnot. But I'm starting to see, much like we were talking about earlier, is we're holding onto that car a little bit longer. We're kind of waiting to see what's going to happen in the next year or 2 years with the economy, with the political climate, with everything going on.
Yep.
Rather than having be stuck with a $400, $500, $600 a month car payment, let's spend a little bit on what we have now. As long as, you know, the foundation is good, the rest of the car is good, we'll do the mechanical repairs. And even we're starting to see some people invest in some body work as well to be able to get these cars to last.
Right.
So we're seeing a bigger investment in the cars that you have now to hold on to them, to make them last a little bit longer, and kind of wait this whole thing out and see what's going to happen. So, good question. And again, we would typically start to look at, all right, it's time to put an engine in or a transmission in, and this is going to be a $3,000 or $4,000 repair. And more often than not, people would tend to just walk away from that at that point. But that question is becoming more and more difficult, because all of a sudden, when that $3,000 or $4,000 repair would meet or exceed the value of the car, now given the market, that car, you know, the car's worth so much more.
Yep.
And so now we're starting to look at it a little bit differently. So if we put $3,000 or $4,000 in, we spread those payments out over a couple of years, or if you're smart enough to bank some of your stimulus money, then you've got some tucked away and ready to go.
Right.
And you can pay for it out of pocket, then that much better. And so now it becomes a good investment, where before we would just take and walk away from it.
Right.
Dan Weed is with us, Weed Family Automotive, and located for the last 26 years at 124 Store Street in Concord. We're heading down the home stretch of another Feltus and Kale radio extravaganza, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 103.9, 1450, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Feltus and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Dan Weed with us today from Weed Family Automotive. We talked about the spike in used car sales earlier in the program. So when buying a used car, in the market for a used car, what are some of the things that consumers should be wary of when they go to the lot and look for a used vehicle?
Well, I think the biggest thing is get it checked out, get a second opinion. You know, we all get excited when it comes to a new purchase, and especially a car purchase. It's a big investment. Get a second opinion from a objective repair shop that, you know, all right, we're not involved in this buying process. We're going to check it out, look at it, and tell you what we see. And look at the track record of the car, too. I mean, we've gotten so accustomed to seeing cars with, you know, 100, 150,000 miles like it's nothing. And, you know, we're starting to see 200,000 and 300,000 miles every day. So you get around that 100,000-mile mark, there's some maintenance concerns and whatnot. But definitely get somebody to check it out for you. Even, you know, you've got some great reputable sales places out there. You've got some that are not so reputable out there, but definitely get that second opinion. Have somebody check it out for you. Have somebody look it over. You know, make sure that they look at it with a scan tool. Make sure that the codes or the computer system wasn't just reset with the emissions monitors and whatnot. Things like that. And again, that second set of eyes is 100% my strong recommendation.
And whomever is trying to sell you that used car, if you ask for that second opinion, get it checked out, and they say no, we're not gonna, that's a red flag.
It is. Yeah, just if they won't let it go and have somebody check it out, just walk away.
Yep.
Yeah. No, that should definitely be a red flag. But then are also, you know, the people are so anxious when they get to that lot, they want to pick something out. I'm sure there are many, many times when people do not get that second opinion, and in many cases, I'm sure it results in buyer's remorse.
Oh, a huge amount of buyer's remorse, and I've seen it firsthand. And you know, part of me feels bad, but the other part of me is, you know, we've talked about this long enough that, you know, get that second opinion, get somebody to check it out, and if you've not, and all of a sudden you bought something that needs an awful lot of work, you know, I'm sorry, but you know, sometimes my sympathy isn't probably as strong as it should be.
So get that second opinion. That is the bottom line when you're out, you know, not only buying a used car, but it also in some cases could apply to a new car as well. So bear that in mind, and always good advice to do that. Dan Weed is with us, and Dan, everybody's pretty much using synthetic oil these days, correct?
It's most of our oil changes have gone to a synthetic or a semi-synthetic blend, and it amazes me that almost every year the manufacturers come out with a new oil viscosity that we have to worry about. You know, it used to be that we had a 1030 or 1040, and I'm dating myself, and it covered everything.
Yeah.
You know, now we're down to, you know, when they went to a 530, we kind of all laughed like, yeah, this stuff will never last, but it's still out there. Then a 520. 020 was out there. Then they went to a 016. They're down to a 08 now in synthetic weight oil. And it's no different than, in my mind, pouring water out of the faucet. It is so thin. But they're building these engines to meet the emission standards. And we've seen some manufacturers, I'll call it, slip up, so to speak. They didn't do any redesign on their engines and just changed the requirement from a 530 to a 020. And then all of a sudden they have a oil consumption issue within the engine. And if you bring it back to that 520 or 530 in a synthetic, and all of a sudden that problem goes away.
Right. Wonder why.
Yeah. So it's been interesting to see that the evolution of, and not only engine oil, but transmission antifreeze. You know, when General Motors in 1995 came out with their horrible experiment called Dexcool of their long life antifreeze, and it created more problems than it did anything else. But now all of a sudden, you've got different manufacturers with different requirements for antifreeze. You know, what should be everyday, simple, quick and easy, pour it in. No, you can't mix that up anymore either.
Right.
So why does the viscosity change on such a regular basis?
The biggest reason, in my mind anyway, is fuel mileage. So the thinner the oil, the less friction, the better the fuel mileage. And when you can increase the corporate average fuel economy by even half a mile per gallon over the entire fleet to the manufacturer, that's huge.
Well, I guess that explains it. Dan Weed, always a pleasure to have you with us. Great talking the automotive world with you and other things as well that impact the economy. Dan Weed, Weed Family Automotive, conveniently located at 124 Storrs Street in Concord. You can give them a call at 225-7988. Or check them out online, weedfamilyautomotive.com, or on Facebook as well. Dan, always a pleasure.
Thanks. It was great to be back with these two world-famous hosts.
You got it. Thanks,
take
Dan.
Take their cars to Weed Family Automotive.
Yeah, you should. We do. Take care.
Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire Dairy Farmers.